Blog Talk Radio.
2006, we all faced with the same bullshit. Black cop, white cop, it don't matter. Bad cop, a cop killer, 60 murder, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. If a cop kills me, the law is minimal. Police is hiding behind the law, cause they the real criminal. When a cop kills, 60 murder, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. Cop kills me, the loss is minimal. Police lie behind the law, cause they the real criminal.
Yeah, the gang in blue still the pig true. Now they got tear gas and Billy Club too. And if you club dude, don't run from the challenge. Just cock back your hammers and pop one of the cabins. The average policeman lacks proper respect. So I get respect back with the Glock of the tech. For they had me on the deck, so blocking my neck. He'll catch this right hook and get dropped with the left. Who'd expect my enemy to look like me? Black cops showing off, he's just a crook like me. It's like we ignorant to our rights, we all seen. We should've left. What's that heat for New Orleans and then left. What's the phone for the Gulf Coast? They left people there with no hope. Cause we poke up most cops murder us and get slapped with a wrist. Uncle Tom MC scared to rap about this.
A cop killer, 60 murder, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. If a cop kills me, the law is minimal.
We're in the middle of a war. Bars on your windows and doors. Your home is a prison. The way we live in is poor. The Lord got gas. Act like we can't hold heat. That's the reason I speak. My folks can't stay sleep. Patrol our own streets. We're living in a police state. Y'all live behind steel gates to try to feel safe. Still race wars erupt. All my brothers are stuck behind prison bars. Give us scars and third eye shut. Rise up. You gotta make the revenue stack before physical combat. Your minds are attacked. So I got stacks and books. Getting my mind. It's simple mathematics, my music is graphic. So this is what you get when the beast attacking. Get at us if you're ready to ride. This one here's for all my soldiers down. I'm never gonna hide.
A cop killer, 60 murder, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. If a cop kills me, the loss is minimal. Police hide behind the law, cause they the real criminals. A cop killed, 60 murder, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. If a cop kills me, the loss is minimal.
The new gang mentality, government immorality, worldwide brutality. I know they probably mad with me. Sad to see children living with lies told to the public, cousin. We living with eyes closed to the fact that police get away with murder every day, never pay for the people they hurt. A word up, the Patriot Act, that's the right back. Now pigs come in the crib and don't have to ask, or even slash a war near war with my folks. Killing people cause they broke all over the Gulf Coast. Most folks obey the law, really might get stopped.
Another edition of Your World News. I'm your host, Solomon, and we've got another great edition. We've been on a bit of a hiatus. I've been in and out of the country. The empire, otherwise known as the U.S., been in and out, and thankfully so, you know, have the opportunity. It's always good if you have the opportunity to get outside the empire and to experience civilization outside of the U.S. to really give you opportunity to see what, to compare and contrast what U.S. life in comparison to other societies is really like. So I'm back, and like I said, welcome to Your World News, where we present news, information, and critical analysis of events and topics that, quite frankly, the mainstream corporate news in the, I can't even call it news, but the mainstream corporate media, I should say, in the United States, seldom, if ever, reports on it and certainly never gives a critical analysis. So anyways, today we have a really special issue episode and special from the aspect that I hope it serves as a rallying cry to everyone that's listening, especially those who may not have been in touch with this issue that that we're going to be discussing today with my guest. His name is Robert Binion, and he's a peach farmer and a longtime civil rights activist from the state of Alabama. He's from Clayton, Alabama, and he'll be coming on in about 15 minutes to discuss a very, very important rally that's going on this week with black farmers from various states throughout the southern United States are coming in to you know, demand justice from the USDA in the face of discrimination and institutional racism that has been leaking, you know, in large amounts from the United States government. And, you know, and when we look at the USDA, they are a wing of the U.S. government. And so this has been an ongoing battle for the past, I believe, 10 to 12 years. And Mr. Binion is going to put things into their proper context, going to talk about what this whole issue is about, why they're protesting, why they're rallying, why they're demanding justice. And hopefully all of you that are listening, you know, obviously a lot of folks that are listening will probably know about this this issue, and many of you may already be engaged in this battle in solidarity with the black farmers. But even if you are, make sure you send this the link to this show out to as many of your comrades as possible. You know, it's really, really important that we support these black farmers in their quest for justice. You know, their struggle is our struggle. It's no different. So that will be in about 15 minutes. But let me catch you up on where I've been. I went back. I was back in my home, Trinidad. I was in the West Indies, in the Caribbean, in Trinidad, where I'm originally from, and I had the opportunity to go home, as I do every year, a couple times a year, to visit family and friends and to just kind of get away from the empire. And then when I came back, I had the opportunity to go to the protest festival in Kristiansand, Norway. If you can imagine, two polar extremes. But I went to Norway. Never thought I would actually end up going to Norway at any point in my life, but I did. I went to Norway. I was invited there to participate in the protest festival and to give a couple lectures on hip-hop's relationship with the corporate media in this country, and to also talk about social issues and the issue of social justice and injustices that occur in the belly of the beast, and that beast being the U.S. And so it was a great trip. From the standpoint, it gave me an opportunity really to observe what a civilized government bequeaths upon its citizens, you know, a government that is not wholly consumed by the bottom line, you know, that being the profits, a society that puts people before profits, you know. And so there are many different societies throughout this world that put people before profits. However, in the U.S., that is not the case. In the U.S., that is definitely not the case. In the U.S., it is profits before people, profits before people, and that is the rule of the day. And so, and if the U.S. can, if they can find a way to monopolize and to commodify and to place a price tag on something, even if it goes to the social good and of the people, the populace, they'll do it. So we see with healthcare, that's why healthcare, there is no such thing as universal healthcare in the United States. But in Norway, there is. There, everybody has healthcare, has top-of-line healthcare, top-of-line healthcare, whether you're, you know, a university professor, whether you're a government dignitary, or if you're, you know, a school teacher or a street sweeper, everyone has universal health care. And so, but then when we look at the different jobs, they have a livable wage, which I guess would be their minimum wage, the minimum that any one person can get paid in Norway. It's roughly around the equivalent of U.S. dollars, about $18 U.S. an hour. That is their minimum slash livable wage. Here in the U.S., it's $7.45, maybe 65 cents, I'm not sure, but it's in that range. So it's a huge distinction. But everybody gets health care, gets great health care. If you are unfortunate enough, you have to get an operation. I mean, they get you in and out, get you into that operating room, you know, within a week or two of diagnosis. The other thing, since I mentioned a professor at a university, since I mentioned, you know, whether you're a professor or someone else, if you qualify, every child in that country, every human being in that country that is a resident or a citizen that has qualified for college, for university, goes to university for free. You know, and so they've got many colleges and universities all the way from Kristiansand all the way up north to Oslo. And so if you qualify, you get to go to one of those universities for free. Free. All right? Free. You might pay $100 a year for books or something like that, but you get to go for free. That's access. That is what their tax dollars go to. Their tax dollars don't go towards, you know, paying for imperialist wars, you know, in places like Afghanistan and Iraq and then Pakistan, like the U.S. government does. It's totally antithetical to that. So here, where 40%+ of our tax dollars go towards paying for military, one of the close to 1,000 military bases throughout the world, or these illegal wars of occupation, in Norway, their tax dollars go towards society in general. Where do I go from there? The educational system, they actually fund their educational system from primary to middle to secondary. I mean, they fund their educational system. So students start to learn a second language, which would be English. They would learn English in second grade. And by eighth grade, they're pretty much proficient in English as well as their native Norwegian. And then in eighth grade, they choose from a third language and start to learn a third language. So in essence, most students finish their high school careers with, being proficient in three languages, you know, having three languages under their belt. Where here, it's a requirement that you just kind of, you know, take a language, just for the requirement, get in and get out. We have vastly underfunded schools. We have the school system in this country is, you know, the priority of the school system falls way beneath building prisons, way obviously beneath military, black schools that are in predominantly black and brown areas are systematically given the shaft, given the FUCK, you know, routinely. Now we start to see them being privatized. As I said before, in the U.S., if they can make a profit on it, they will most certainly try to do so. So with schools, you know, now we see the whole charter school movement, which basically is the corporatization and the privatization of public schools. So it was just, you know, and it was more so, you know, being in Norway and having the opportunity to travel throughout the southern part of Norway, primarily in Kristiansand, it was just kind of like bittersweet because all of these things that I mentioned about Norway could be realities in the U.S., could without a doubt be realities in the U.S. You know, the U.S. by far definitely has the budget, you know what I'm saying, has the means, the wherewithal to do all those things, to fund a strong single-payer healthcare system, to fund schools across the board, whether they be maybe coming in from rural America to inner-city America, funding all schools, bringing students up to speed, having a strong public educational system, which is what the U.S. does not have, all these things. I mean, the government of Norway, I mean, they just recently sent all of their citizens pedometers, and they asked, you know, citizens to try to, you know, try to monitor how many steps they take in any given day. And they said, you know, you should be shooting for 10,000 steps a day. They have access to, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables and whole grains. I mean, this is something, affordable housing. But you saw very, 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 very few overweight Norwegians. The government does not allow, you know, recombinant growth bovine hormones in the cows, so the subaquine is not in the milk. Everything is pretty much ecological from that standpoint. Here, it's just, you know, the corporate masters rule the day. And so if these fast food joints and these horrendously, like, vile, evil corporations like Monsanto can spend enough money on lobbyists to get into Capitol Hill, they will. And what happens is that you and I lose, because that influences these corrupt, just vile human beings that that exist on both sides of the house, you know, who allow themselves to be influenced by corporate lobbyists and affect everything from internet, you know, the fight for net neutrality to the fight against having these hormones put into our foods and so forth. So it was a good trip. It was a good trip, a very good trip. A lot of things in perspective. Had studied a lot before, you know, about different countries, looking, you know, Scandinavian countries, but even, you know, looking at, you know, what countries like Venezuela do in terms of their recent educational reforms and how they are able to provide, you know, these health missions in different barrios throughout Venezuela. But to actually go there, it puts it in a whole different light, a whole different perspective, an entirely, entirely different perspective. You know, and not everyone has the opportunity to travel abroad because of financial reasons. I understand that. And if I didn't have funding to go there, if I didn't have outside funding to go there, I wouldn't have donated that trip. I certainly didn't have that kind of cash to put up to make that kind of trip. But it was life changing, man. And it really, came back and understand what kind of matrix so many of us live within, and we're not supposed to know about the evils that exist around us. And if you don't know about the evils that exist around you in terms of what your government is and is not providing you in comparison to other countries that don't have half of the GDP that the U.S. does or half of the monetary resources the U.S. does, it really prevents you from like fighting for and seeing a better and envisioning a better society that you live in. So it's important for us for those of us who understand this to really spread and permeate the word to as many people within our communities as we can, and to continue to push and galvanize and mobilize individuals and communities to really create some kind of sustained movement. A sustained movement that demands justice, equality, and just basically a better way of living. There's no reason. I mean, that crap that was just passed is health insurance reform. It's not health care reform. We need to demand. I mean, if we can't let it just continue to slip away and just be pacified and complacent with this crap that was just passed, there needs to be a single-payer health care system. When you have 40,000+ people that die every year because of health, because of lack of health insurance or health care, that's a human rights issue. That's a human rights issue that we all have to fight for. So anyways, I could go on for a long, long time, and perhaps I will at a different time. But I want to set the stage for Mr. Robert Binion, who will be calling in a couple minutes. This was a short radio expose that was done by Glenn Ford of Black Agenda Report about a year ago, when this story really started to become more and more hot. And I'm going to play this, and then on the other end, Robert Binion will be joining us, and we'll hit the ground running. You're more than welcome to call in. The call-in number is 347-945-5191. That's 347-945-5191. Please call in, and looking forward to having this great discussion and dialogue with Mr. Robert Binion.
Some of Barack Obama's chickens and other assorted farm animals are coming home to roost. 6 months into his term as United States Senator, Barack Obama introduced legislation to compensate black farmers for the cruel and blatant discrimination they'd suffered at the hands of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Obama had apparently been moved by the black farmers' claims that federal farm officials had methodically denied them federal monies routinely handed out to white farmers. According to the Washington-based Environmental Working Group, black farmers received only one-third to one-sixth of the federal benefits and subsidies collected by other farmers over more than a 10-year period. Black farmers, as a class, were becoming extinct, partly due to federal government practices. The black farmers sued, forcing the federal government to pay out nearly $1 billion to settle about 16,000 claims. But as many as 65,000 additional farmers had claims that could amount to as much as $4 billion. That's when Senator Obama joined legislation to champion their cause. Congress allocated $100 million with the apparent intention to release more funds later. But it didn't turn out that way, and the black farmers have come to believe that now President Obama is flipping the script on them. Last week, the black farmers and their supporters turned out in force on Capitol Hill, demanding that the Obama administration and the Congress do right by the 94,000 of their fellow tillers of the soil who ultimately filed for claims against the feds. Obama had indeed changed his tune upon becoming president. Now, his administration's position was that the initial $100 million was all the black farmers were going to get. It wasn't a down payment, but a cap, a ceiling. The black farmers felt betrayed. John Boyd, president of the National Black Farmers Association, said Obama's formula wouldn't even pay the lawyers' fees. Many of his members are facing imminent loss of their land. Obama and congressional Democrats urged the black farmers to have patience, but John Boyd replied, "It's too late for that." They didn't tell the banks, the auto companies, and the insurance companies to wait, said Boyd. He continued, right is right, and it doesn't matter who is in the White House. That's when Obama trotted out black Alabama Congressman Archer Davis to take the heat from the black farmers. Congressman Davis, one of the most corporate-friendly members of the Congressional Black Caucus and a protege of White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel, claimed the $100 million was just a placeholder for monies that would be allocated in due time, that it was not a cap, despite what administration lawyers had said in a legal motion filed in February. The black farmers' patience may be short, but time is in even shorter supply. A little over a century ago, blacks made up 14% of all American farmers. Today, they are less than 1.5%. Congressman Davis tried to reassure the farmers. "I know the heart of the president," he said. But Obama's heart doesn't sign any checks. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to www.blackagendareport.com.
Yeah, and that was Glenn Ford. And that was in 2009 when that report was done. But I thought it would give... It would set the table and give some meat to the segue towards our conversation with Mr. Robert Binion, who I'm waiting for to call in right now and should be calling in soon. But in the meantime, between now and when he calls in, it's really important to really sink your teeth into what these black farmers are going through. These are loans that have evaded them, that systematically have been handed out, have been doled out to their white counterparts for a long, 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 long time. And as you look at the dwindling number of black farmers, as Glenn Ford just touched on, it's more than injustice. It's a crime. It is a crime committed by the U.S. government against these black farmers, and this is nothing short of systematic institutional racism. It's nothing short of, because if these farmers were of a different pigmentation, if they're white farmers, we know that if they're white farmers, they would have gotten those loans, because the white farmers have been getting these loans. They have been getting these loans, you know, these are things that, quite frankly, a lot of folks that that I've spoken to don't know, didn't even know about this issue, because this is an issue that routinely has not been picked up by the mainstream corporate media. The mainstream corporate media should be doing long exposés on this, on the broadcast media as well as the print media. That's the kind of stuff that enables, you know, the so-called average person to be engaged critically with an issue that may not be happening within their community, but very much so is happening within the American community, and needs to be addressed, and needs to be within the conscious or the subconscious of tens and tens and tens of millions of people, and certainly within the subconscious and the conscious of the 40 million black people that live, you know, in the United or the disunited States of America. I want to play another clip while we're waiting for Mr. Binion to call in. And this is something also was done by Brother Glenn Ford, and this had to do with the Shelly Sherrod story that happened, you know, during this past summer, because it's connected to the USDA, obviously, because she was an employee of the USDA, and so I'm going to play this, and hopefully on the other end, by the time we'll have Mr. Binion on line one, and we can get moving with this discussion.
When discussing the case of Shirley Sherrod, we cannot forget that the true culprit is an endemic political liberalism. It is not the right or the conservatives at Fox News. It is not the Tea Party or its media punditry, and it is certainly not some right-wing operative who keeps doctoring videos. It is a soft reformist liberal politics that is to blame. Sherrod is yet another in a procession of reasons to be disgusted by the absolute weakness of President Obama, the Democratic Party, civil rights leaders, and of liberalism itself. This is what was ultimately behind yet another black woman being publicly scorned, forcibly removed from rightful position, and blamed for all that is wrong in the world. It is a liberalism which has long frustrated true progressives. It is why Malcolm warned of the liberal fox, and King described the racial solidarity which often resulted in the liberal walking off with the aggressor. And it is why Stokely called the white liberal the weakest element of their community, whose only real purpose was to stem a more revolutionary tide. It is this self-fulfilling liberalism, a loyal opposition liberalism, that produced the conditions in which Sherrod would be condemned. Of course, it is this same liberalism which made Sherrod possible, which made Obama possible, and makes the black liberalism which supports them both. The black liberalism which is the most vile of white supremacist production. In the military, we were told that stuff rolls downhill. This meant that bad orders started at the top, picked up steam, while increasing in size and severity of impact, all culminating in a horrible crash upon those at the bottom. And in a white supremacist, capitalistic, and patriarchal society, black women, quite naturally, are that proverbial bottom upon which all society's ills fall the hardest. Shirley Sherrod was ultimately ordered to the side of the road, told to resign, and forced to pay a public and private price because of the stuff which formed at the top. It formed in the failure among us to reignite more radical movements which allowed Obama to eventually be seen as progress. It is Obama's condemnation of Reverend Wright, his refusal to attend the World Conference Against Racism, his lack of any meaningful commentary on Sean Bell, his backing down to a white cop and to an institution that routinely brutalizes black people, which ultimately supports the killing of Oscar Grant, and now James Rivera, another 15-year-old black child killed this week by police. From there, the stuff continues to roll. The NAACP makes deals with super predator Wells Fargo, accepts Obama's absence of a black agenda, and then is snookered by an already exposed media fraud into condemning Sherrod. Taking their cue from the president, who takes his own from the most liberal economic and political elite, they offer a trifling apology for what only occurred because of this fundamental liberalism. And isn't the depth of this pitiful liberalism voiced by its own language? What organization can be popular, powerful, and black with leadership that not only can be so easily snookered, but then says out of its mouth that it has been snookered? No longer are we even hoodwinked or bamboozled. You know, tricked, but strongly tricked. I suppose it's the difference between being outwitted and being without wit at all. We can't even be the more 21st century pimped. That's how soft we've become. Now we are snookered. Liberalism is our greatest problem. Not the right, not the conservative media, and not even lunatics on television who seemingly can topple a black president and the most revered civil rights organization. It is by not pressing a more sustained, public, and vigorous response to the ravages of racism in this country that liberalism has allowed for this yet another demonstration of weakness. Having mentioned one Reverend Wright felled by liberalism, let me close with the words of another Reverend Wright who warned of that very dangerous liberal tendency almost 200 years ago. In 1837, Reverend Theodore Wright made a challenge to the liberal abolitionists of his day, saying, "I fear not at all the machination, calumny, and opposition of slaveholders when contrasted with the annexation of men whose hearts have not been deeply imbued with the high and holy principles of racial equality. Remember, this prejudice must be killed or slavery will never be abolished." For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Jared Ball. Online, visit www.blackagendareport.com.
And that was Brother Jared Ball. And as you saw in the beginning of his piece that he did for Black Agenda Report, Black Agenda Radio, you know, he discussed Sherrod and put it into great, great, very, very, you know, on point context. And I see that we have Mr. Binion on the line. And I just want to say before I pass to him, I think Jared brought up a really good point. If we don't start to, you know, get serious about these issues, they're not going to go away. And if you don't think that they matter to you, if you don't think the black farmers issue matters to you because you live in metropolitan Washington, D.C. or New Jersey or someplace else, it will come to your door. If we do not rally together and defend the black farmers and fight against injustice wherever it may be, especially when it's at the doorstep of black and brown skinned people in this country, it will come home. Those chickens will come home to roost. It will come to your community. It will come to our community in some shape, form, or fashion. And if we haven't put together some kind of sustained mobilization and fight against this, and I mean sustained, where we can't allow, we can't allow the fact that we don't see, you know, tangible results within the first week or month or so allow us to stop. It has to be a sustained movement. It has to be a sustained movement. We have to be willing to lead. We have to be willing to follow. We have to be willing to march side by side with others in our community, others outside the community. Those who wish to fight for justice and fight against injustice, who are against something or for something, regardless of what they look like, you know, unless we start to join up with these comrades and to fight, just to fight in general, it will come home to roost. So we have to, and so I think this is one of the many battles that we have to choose from. And I don't think that we have to actually choose and say, oh, this one went over the other one. I said we have to fight for all of them. And so this issue with the black farmers is at the top of the priorities. I mean, they're all at the top of the list, you know, and this issue is certainly, just because it's not in the sights and sounds and subconscious of most Americans, or, you know, doesn't mean that it's not a high priority. It is. And so without further ado, I'd like to introduce Mr. Robert Binion on the line one of Your World News. Mr. Binion, are you on?
I'm on the line.
How you doing, brother?
And I apologize. I was supposed to call you at 1:20, but I was out with the TV station trying to push this story of the black farmers. And I thank God for men like you who want to just hear our story, of what we are doing and how long we've been fighting this fight. And I can say again, whatever question you got to ask me, this, and I can lead or I can follow. Just you go right ahead and ask me these questions.
Oh, I'm your humble servant, and this is the least I can do as a black man. This is my duty. If I did anything less than what I'm doing right now, I wouldn't be wearing my skin well. So it's my duty to put this on the air and to also to follow and to fight and to get myself dirty in the trenches in whatever way I can. And so this is not it for me. My body is a vessel to be used, on the ground to help rally and protest and to get as many people engaged as I possibly can. So I want to hit the ground running and kind of ask you if you can tell our listeners, if you can
bring
give
up
them an
speed on where we're at and where we're going.
Exactly. Yeah. What is this all about? What, yeah.
Okay. This movement. I got this movement. I was in Washington. It started in the early in 1990. I sent 200 names to USDA. People signed the petition that we have been mistreated in the South, and not only the South but throughout. And what I say to your listeners this afternoon, if they can just pick up enough fight in themselves and not just pitch it, it's for Robert Bingham, but it's for your grandchildren what we are going to do. We're trying to turn the tides because we know that racism and discrimination still exists, and we know that we got to be the one to attack these issues. And the Black Farmers lawsuit started in 90, like I said, 95. We sit around the table with Al Pyrie, our attorney, and the late, great J.L. Chestnut. And we sit and we talked about who would be the plaintiffs. And I was the fourth plaintiff for the states. They would say they'd use my name being the fourth plaintiff for the state of Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Michigan, Minnesota. My name was carried throughout that lawsuit. But yet and still I haven't got any results behind even the use of my name or the loans and the grants that are due to us. I want to tell America and I want to tell the nation this day that they are discriminating and they are continuing to discriminate. They are defying the court order, which if I defy a court order, Mr. Solomon, they'd put me in jail and wouldn't even let me out for bond. But America itself is defying a court order. That the court order under our dissent decree that when we won the lawsuit in 97, when Dan Clinton and Mr. President, who was president, Mr. Clinton, and they declared and it's wrote and it's documented that they have discriminated against black farmers. They set out to destroy us. Like even Moses' name was left. They wanted to leave him out the Bible. They have set out to destroy us, and I'm not going to sit out by and watch it happen because I see what they are doing to us, and not only us, our people. And it's a shame before God that men can sit on the throne like the Bushes, like all of them have sit on the throne and get away with the black farmer, trying to do away with the black farmer. But I say to your listeners, we're going to be there on the 21st, the 22nd, and the high peak day, like I've been telling you, is the 23rd. Everybody come down. I'm going to, on the 21st, when we get into town, we're going to consecrate the ground. We're going to walk that ground, and we're going to praise God and lift the name of God up in Jesus. And we're going to do that because that's the only thing I know that pricks the heart of man. God can take a stony heart man and make him a man to be fair to us. If we don't prick their heart, the Republican Party, neither the Democrat Party, will see fit in the Senate to try to answer the question that we're going to ask them on Wednesday. This fight is started a long time ago. We've been in it 10 to 12 years. And it's some farmers now who started with me have died simply because they gave them heart attacks. They took and set them off their farm when we was on a moratorium that no farmer would be set off his land. But they're doing that. They had that they would pay if you owed them a debt, and they would wipe that debt clean because we caught them red-handed stealing and stealing from us, and giving it to the white farmer. And we're not fighting the white farmer. Now, don't get me wrong. We're fighting injustice. We're fighting the establishment, USDA, and the long arm of the last plantation, I say, we are fighting it. You know, we was on plantation once in the South, and we fought that and come, and through God Almighty, we came through that. And through this incident here, Mr. Solomon, we're gonna overcome this incident. I know folks are saying John Boyd is riding around town on his tractor. Let him ride. We don't care. We want everybody who will. If somebody got a pair of mules, bring them to town. We just want to show this government that we are taxpayers, Mr. Solomon. We pay taxes. I'm a taxpaying citizen. And if I didn't pay my taxes, they'd take my little old house and land. And that's all we want folks to know. We're not asking for no handout. We're proud American. We're not the type of American that they're just going around asking for a handout. If you look at the white farmer, what they give them, $1 million a year, farmers, and the black farmer can't even get a grant.
Right.
And this is the fight we are fighting, and this is the fight we got to continue to fight. I will not quit. Until we resolve some of these issues,
right, and we can't quit. We can't quit alongside of you, man. We have to.
And I appreciate you, Mr. Solomon, for allowing me this time to even speak at it. But there are so many things they have done to us. They even seek the FBI on some of them. FBI stood at my door 2 days in a row in '99 and watched my house like I was a thief. And I ain't stole, if you can check my record and jail record, I ain't got no jail record. I never stole nothing from a man. But they sit in front of my house and watch my house. I'd wave at them when I leave. I don't have nothing to hide. Don't have a hidden agenda. I don't have no hidden agenda. Everything I want to do it in open. And the black farmers, they've been discriminated against. They've been foreclosed on, illegal. They set a man out in Louisville, Kentucky, 5 days from being sit outdoors. And, Mr. let me say this. We started this lawsuit in '99. I took a man to the USDA office 2 years ago, filled out his application, got his loan application and everything, and cash flowed his loan. Do you not know this man had a 790 credit score? And they have not yet loaned him the money today. He got a lawyer now in court. He's going to court with him right now. These are the kind of tactics they are using on us. They're trying to discourage us. But I'm preaching now. I'm preaching to the choir now. I want young farmers, 18, 16. I'm going out and reach and get some of them 18, 16 farmers if I have to go somewhere and try to get them loans in another through another source. They made some loans last year in 2008, and I got everything documented. They made some loans to a $50 million of a loan to folks. Do you not know not one of those loans went to a black farmer? $50 million of 2008 is within the farm bill, and if you find me one black farmer got some of that $50 million, then I'll sit down, shut up, and be quiet.
Right.
This is what we are fighting against.
Right.
And I want to say to the radio listeners, y'all come on down and help us. Hold up a sign saying, pay the black farmer. Not only that, stop discrimination in the USDA office. If you, we got these offices you call the farm committee, where they got the three on there, decide whether you get farmed. It used to be you decide whether you get a disaster if you lost a crop. And they would pay. This is not. I'm not making up anything I say. It's documented. They would pay the white farmer 100% on their crop loss. They would pay the black farmer 30% and 50% on their crop loss. Is that discrimination? I'm just looking at it wrong. Don't you think that's discrimination?
Without a doubt, that's a crime. That's a crime. That's discrimination. That's institutional racism. That's all of that. Exactly. That's all of that.
That's what I'm saying, and this is what's happening to us, to the black farmer. And we have talked to some black farmers. I'm with a guy documented following me. He's going to follow me all the way to Washington, D.C. Got a camera on me right now in my kitchen and as I talk. But he's going to filing documents, some of the things. And I took into some farmers this morning. That's one reason I was a little late. And we got caught up with and how they have been treated. If he talked to three farmers I know, and not one of them could tell him that they done got a loan from USDA. Three out of three. And if I take him to 10 more, be the same thing. It won't be documented nowhere that they could, that there has been a loan made of over 50 any black folks.
Right. We have someone, a caller that just called in, Mr. Binion. I'm going to pass them through. I think they have a question or a comment for you.
Okay.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hello? Is it me or is it the person ahead of me?
No, you're on the air with Robert.
Okay.
Binion.
Okay, Robert Binion. I wondered if you could tell the listeners today what the plan is for Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and also if you could tell people if there's been a change in the policies of the USDA since the new administration, when Mr. Vilsack said there would be zero tolerance for any kind of discrimination by the USDA.
Well, I can say this. Either I'm reading the wrong statistics or either I can't read. I hadn't seen any change. I've took farmers to these offices. Even I've been to the office. I've seen a little. They treat you a little better friendly-wise, but we're still not getting the loans out. And the discrimination, that's still being practiced. I hadn't seen those changes that Mr. Vilsack. And by the way, since the caller asked me about Vilsack, I called him a month ago and asked him to be at one of the meetings we are having. He sent Mr. Joe Leonard, and he refused to come and talk to us. That's why this problem's not going to go away. Everybody's sugarcoating them. Did I answer your question?
Yes, I wondered if you could also say a little bit about the schedule for this.
Okay, I'm sorry. The schedule is on Monday is the scheduling is prayer day, prayer and worship. That's all I'm going to do. I'm going to talk to God on that day. And on Tuesday, we got a meeting with Mr. Pearly Reed, who's over the administration, USDA, the civil rights side. And we got one with the Mr. Pearly Reed and Mr. Lloyd Wright at 10 o'clock. At 11:30, Congressman Peterson, to meet with her ag committee at 11:30 on that same day. And at 2 o'clock, I'm to meet with the ag committee on Lincoln, Brass Lincoln ag committee. And that evening, I hadn't planned it, but I kind of brushed on it. I want to talk to the head adjudicator at over 7 o'clock at our hotel where we'll be staying. I'm going to have a conference call with him, a conference meeting with him, to ask him why it takes so long to adjudicate a case for black farmers.
And on Thursday morning,
At high noon, we'll be, that's the high peak of the rally, but I will go and be done talk to my Senator Shelby and Senator Sessions. I'm going to put my hand in their hand and just let them know that I'm human. I may be black in color, but I'm human. And why is it that we having so much trouble to get this loan passed from the Senate is failing to do what they need to do. And on Friday.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're more
than
welcome.
And then Friday?
On Friday, if we done negotiated enough and they want to cut some checks for some farmers I got coming, we'll stay there Friday. We'll stay there and see what they got to do.
Okay, so people in Washington can come down on Thursday at noon.
They can come down
to participate with the Friday, with the farmers.
Day. They can come any day they want to. They welcome down there any day because we're going to be in front across from that mall on the 14th Street side every day. We'll meet there. I've got the permit to meet out there every day.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Binion.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Carl. And so, you know, as people were listening, you know, they can come down and protest every day.
Every day.
They can come down and
every day.
Protest
Miss Solomon, that Monday, we'll be out there praying and talking about Jesus, but if they hold up a sign, I'm not going to tell them to take it down.
Okay.
it seems like
Thursday is like a big rally. I mean,
yes,
every day,
Thursday, I'm hoping on Thursday I can give the news media something to cheer about. I'm hoping that we're going to be done. I talked briefly with some folks from Washington in the USDA side, on the USDA side, about the SOL. Yeah, that SOL is very important. When I say that statute of limitation side, they have sit 9,000 farmers in the basement during the Bush era, and they hadn't even looked at their complaint. So how I'm trying to bring the SOL up so they can be brought into this law, you know, be paid. Because they made the complaint, but didn't nobody look at them.
Right, exactly.
And that's what we're trying to do.
If people want to get in contact with you for more information for
media
contact.
You can call me at 205-299-1873. That's my cell phone. And also at my home, I'm going to have it trans all my calls as I leave here on Monday. I'm leaving Monday at 10 o'clock. We got a bus leaving from this area, and we're going to leave Monday at 10 o'clock. But you can call the house, and I'm going to have those numbers transferred. All my numbers going to be transferred to my cell phone. So if you want to get contact Robert Binion, it's 205-299-1873.
Okay. And next question I want to ask, like, can you talk about the, like, which states down south have the most concentration of black farmers, and then how much black land loss has occurred, you know, throughout the years?
Okay, yes, I can. The state of Alabama, if I'm wrong, you correct me, you stop me, has 10,000 claimants. And that lawsuit has been failed. They have been failed to be dealt with. And the land loss, I got a list of the land loss and the farmers that's gotten loans and them, and it's zero on the loans. But the land loss is somewhere in the neighborhood of we lost somewhere in the neighborhood of about maybe almost 25,000 to 100,000 acres of land since we've been dealing with this black, maybe a little more. I got it's the statistics is in the room there, and I like I say, I'll have it with me when I come on the 21st. But
right.
And then Mississippi, I don't have all the statistics on that, but it, county by county in Children County, I do have it. Every county that. You know, that have lost land. And every loan, there's not been any loans grants in Alabama for the black farmer. Seems like everybody wants us to get out of business. But if we leave the farm, people can't eat. The row crop farmer is just as important as the soybean farmer and the corn farmer.
Yeah.
The row crop farmer. Even in the Bible, God told them, y'all go and till the soil. And if you stop me from tilling the soil, then I can't eat. And those Mississippi and Louisiana, I don't know the whole statistics on those states, but I do kind of have a rough on mostly Alabama. I went to each state and tried to get leaders to come on and go with us to this rally. And some said they did, but when they heard Mr. Obama say, this is a high priority, and they're going to get paid. You know, they sit back down on me, Mr. Solomon. It really disturbed me. They heard his announcement. I think it was Vernon Jordan asked him a question, what about the black farmers? And he responded that there is a high priority, and they are going to get paid. But I want to ask the question. And when?
Right.
You know, you can always, you can make me high priority, but if you don't never pay me, It's like if I would give you a key to a Cadillac, a brand new Cadillac, and I give you a Cadillac and never give you the key. You can't drive that car.
That's true.
And that's the catch-22 we are in right now. They get that we won the lawsuit, but they won't give us our money.
Yeah, and that was there was 1.2 that was there's 1.25 billion
dollars that Obama
missed
up. But let me say this, Mr. Solomon, the first lawsuit, they don't have to see, they can solve some of the problems with that first Pickford without waiting on. They don't have to worry about that money. We had $2.5 billion. Judge Friedman said that's what we should get. Judge F.L. Friedman in the District Court of Columbus said it. I was sitting there when he said it. Pay these farmers and don't prolong it. It's been 10 years, and they did just the opposite of what Judge Friedman said. And they haven't paid all those in that lawsuit, and it was $2.5 billion with a B in that lawsuit. So why we got to wait? Why has everybody got to wait till they pass that bill? Go on and straighten these farmers out. What's already been damaged, man. That's all I'm saying.
Right, right. We have another caller who is on the line right now from Florida. I'm going to patch them through. Caller,
okay.
You're on the air with Mr. Robert Binion. Your question or your comment? Caller? You're on the air one last time. I guess maybe they got cold feet.
Got cold feet.
I see them as clear as day on the line, but they didn't. Yeah. But so the 1.25 billion that you just explained, that was promised to the black farmers by the Obama administration. So basically, this administration basically has been a lame duck, or you know, they've been completely ineffective and have not followed through on their promises, because it was Senator Obama, President Obama, when he was a senator, that said that he was going to you know, join the fight to help the black farmers. So since he's been president, it seems like this has still been stagnant. It hasn't gone anywhere. Am I correct on this?
You're more than correct, Mr. Solomon. Here's the first thing, the first sign I'm going to hold up. I'm going to hold up myself as Mr. President. Give us an executive order and bring the money with it. Don't write an executive order and just leave the money. He can executive order this thing and pay these farmers and get this mess out the way. And I call it mess because old folks said when you mess with something so long, you know, when you mess with it over a year, it's mess. It's just like, and Mr. Obama he's let the Senate, he's let everybody else, everything else they wanted, he's done it. And Senator, the representative from Alabama, who was Mr. Archer Davis, he helped put this bill together, he and Obama. But right now, I believe they're trying to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I just honestly believe all of them just done said, well, Archer, you didn't get elected. We was hinting on that they would go to the polls in great numbers for you, but he drove his own wagon. Archer drove his own bus off in the cliff. Well, hey, we didn't drive at all. And that's why I think that's why they're stalling us. That's some of the reason this administration is stalling us. I think they done talked about it. I don't know for sure, but, you know, if I was a gambling man, and I don't gamble, I would say that.
Right. If I can ask you, what was your reaction to the firing of Shirley Sherrod, the USDA firing of Shirley Sherrod?
When I heard it really bothers me, but I told somebody the other day in a little local newspaper, they asked me the same question almost. I said, well, there's nearly 70,000 to 80,000 Shirley Sherrods out here. We should make just as big a fuss out of these 70,000 Shirley Sherrods as we do the one Shirley Sherrod. The Bible said we have no respected person. So you just because she worked for USDA and I don't, they should treat us all alike. Fair. And that's black and white alike. And, you know, her fine, I didn't like it. But, you know, these folks have been sit off their farm up in Kentucky. Right. And the same person who fired her, that's who been sending them off the farm, USDA.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm mad, but I'm madder because they're doing these, all these $70,000 the same way.
Yeah, and when you and I were talking yesterday, these are loans that are frequently given out to white farmers. So
oh, yes, Lord. It's just all you have to do. I believe if I could paint myself a night and kind of camouflage it, I could get a loan the next day. Where it takes a farmer, a black farmer, it takes him a year to get an answer no or either yes. And then when they say yes, let me tell you this incident about the USDA. My son had qualified for a USDA loan. Man come down and looked at the cows, 28 cows. And my son was finna go into cow business. He said, oh, Mr. Benyon, you approved. Approved him in writing. He got the letter. And do you not know before the week was out, they denied him? These are the kind of tactics what we having to put up with. And we can't continue like this. We can't. It's got to be resolved, Mr. Solomon. And it's loans like that every day. The gentleman from it's a doctor down in Montgomery, Alabama, put in for a USDA loan. Got over $1 million worth of assets. Black, well, he's not black, but he's dark-skinned. And you know what they do for him? Didn't let him have the loan. If you're dark in color, you're not finna get no loan from USDA. I can tell you that now. Until Mr. Obama and Mr. Vilsack, they got to come to the bat and quit talking good talk and roll their britches up and get down in the gutter with us, because it's out here. Discrimination is here in great numbers. I can talk to if 1,000 folks be at that rally, you ask 1,000 of them, you ask every one of them, if you're out there, Mr. Solomon, ask every one of them, have you been discriminated? They got something to say about it. They got something to say.
To me, you know, Mr. Benyon, one of the most disgusting things about this is that it was our ancestors. It was our ancestors that worked, that were stolen from Africa and brought to this country, and you know, by lazy, you know, rich white men who didn't want to do the work themselves, and worked these fields, hot sun, worked these same fields, the same land, you know, down south. For hundreds of years, and they have their audacity right now. When it was our ancestors that built, you know what I'm saying, built so much of this country, but worked these fields from everything from picking cotton to, you know, to
clean the little babies behind,
all this stuff, exactly, you know, planting crops, and they have the audacity to pull this right now, to pull
it's
this right
wrong.
Now. Yeah.
It's wrong.
It's not
even that. I'm sitting around addressing a letter as I travel north. I'm addressing the letter to the UN, the United Nations, and I want to put everybody on. By the way, I'm talking to somebody from another nation, and I want to put everybody on notice what we're documenting.
Right.
This thing has got to be. It's got to be solved. The problem has got to be solved. We can't brush it under the rug. It's too big a sore to cover it over. You can't cover this over. And in the next administration, whoever come forward, the next one, what, you're just going to keep trying to roll it over?
Right.
And like you say, we built this country by hand. We built the White House where the president sat. We did the labor there. Not only that, the railroad company, all our folks, all our ancestors worked on that railroad and built the railroad system. And now, you know, they want to pull a quick one on us. We cannot let it happen. People like you and I can't let it happen. We can't let this dream die. We got to keep fighting the dream. We can't just have a dream and then, you tell me that your dream, I can't let you have this money to follow your dream. It's racism, discrimination, anything else you want to call it, but it's wrong.
Right. Have you seen much progress since the momentum started to pick up? Like, have you seen like the fruits of your labor start to, you know?
Some folks. We rode out in a little small country town this morning. And, folks, I seen you in the newspaper where you said you're headed to Washington. I just want to give you the thumbs up, man. Hang in there. You know, it's folks want to be there, but there's some folks that's just, you know, they kind of skittish. You know what I mean, Mr. Solomon?
Yes, yes.
So we got some folks out there want to fight, but the government done, and different folks have did it, the police folks and all that, we have to contend with all this, and they're kind of skittish.
Right. Right.
We got to fight, those that are not. But I've had some calls come from Louisiana. Lady, two or three ladies called me from Louisiana today, said they was going to be there. Some called me from Kansas, said they would be there. Some from Mississippi have calls. I've gotten calls in, so I'm collecting. I'm hoping that everybody who's calling me is willing to come and sacrifice and be with us on one of the 3 days. It doesn't matter.
Right, right, and for those folks that are skittish, you know, probably some of them are you know, fans or followers of the life and work of Dr. King. And Dr. King said, you know, that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
That's
so
what
he said. You know, this has to be a fight. This is injustice. This is, as you said, it's discrimination, but it's an injustice, and so. You know, where there's an injustice, you know, we must fight, you know, to make it right. We must fight to make that injustice, you know, overturned, because otherwise, you know, it sure as hell will become a threat to some other place, whether it's 2,000 or 1,000 or a few hundred miles away. And so it's got to be something that we all, even if it's just spreading the word, if someone's listening in California right now or wherever, even if it's just spreading the word and passing this, you know, and sending the link to this interview on to all of your networks, you know, it's important to do something, because as soon as this show's over, you know, this show becomes archived, Mr. Binion, and people can take this link and they can email it and send it to all their networks so that they can listen in and tune in and really get a deep contextual background of what's really going on and why this is a fight to get in, that this is a fight for us to pull our sleeves back and pull our pants up and really get ready to get down and dirty, even if it's hundreds or even if it's a few thousand miles away. We can do this.
Yes, we can, and I thank you for that plug. I really thank you more than you'll ever know. I thank you for even allowing me the time to talk to you today. I really do. I thank God that he touched your heart to let this air out, because it will help your children, if you have any down the road, or my grandchildren. This fight, this tie, if we can turn the tides of this black farmers lawsuit, then everything else would fall in place in the South. I know if we can turn this thing around, and I'm believing God, I really am, that he's pricking the heart of man. You know, I can use this story parable. The Bible parable of Pharaoh, how his heart was hard. And at the end, he had to say, Moses, your God is just as powerful as my God. I don't know who he was serving, but Moses' God prevailed in the end. And I want it to be said, the black farmer's lawsuit prevailed. If you don't even mention my name in print, if it don't be in print, it wouldn't bother me none, Mr. Solomon, but I would be rejoiced more than enough if I could just see it in writing saying the black farmer's lawsuit is resolved and folk are going to be paid within the next year. I want everybody to be paid, and all these claims that's there, let's resolve them within the next year. It can happen. They can do it. They was using, and correct me if I'm wrong, $9 billion a day over in Iraq, a war that I protested from day one. If they were doing that, sending that kind of money, don't you know they can resolve this black farmer's lawsuit?
Thank you. I couldn't have said it better, man. That was perfect, because they're spending, as you said, man, they are spending, to this date, they spent trillions of dollars since this illegal war started in 2003. trillions of dollars to destroy lives.
That's
1.5 million Iraqis have died since this has happened. Tens of thousands of Afghanis, civilians, not combatants, but civilians have died. So if you can spend all that kind of money to take away life, why not spend that kind of money to support farmers like yourself that have been robbed, going back past a decade in terms of not receiving the funds that they need to farmers so that they can produce life, so they can produce life in the ground that is quality organic food that will make its way to somebody's dinner table or someone's lunch table or some kid's lunch bucket somewhere in America. That's producing life. But it just seems to me that this government has its priorities completely out of whack, you know.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You're right. The war, it shouldn't have never happened. That's hindsight. That's beyond the point. I'm not going to even discuss that. But, I'll discuss it with, if you want me to. But the war itself shouldn't have never happened. Never should have happened. It was our lies and deceit. And we got, and in the black farmers, we got documents, true documents, saying that we were discriminated against. And they won't even finish this thing.
Right. It seems like that caller is back on. I hope this works now. Caller from Florida, you're on live right now with Mr. Robert Binion on the Your World News Show. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. This is Omari Musa. I'm on the line now.
Okay.
Good evening.
Go ahead with your question or comment.
Yeah, this is Omari Musa. Congratulations, Mr. Binion. I'll have all my campaign supporters. I'm the candidate for mayor, socialist workers candidate for mayor here in D.C. I'm not in Florida. We met a year and a half or so ago at our office here in Washington, D.C. You may or may not remember.
The names ring a bell.
That's right. Well, I wanted to just say to all those within listening, this is one is that my campaign supports the drive of the farmers to get this business done now, that they should be paid now. And I'm proud that you've organized a demonstration that's going to happen this week. And I urge everybody in D.C. to come out and support the farmers here because it is a matter of simple justice. It's not complicated. It's a matter of simple justice and a fight against discrimination and racism on the land. So I wanted to thank you for addressing the people in this area and give you all of my support.
Thank you. Thank you for the comment, and I thank you for telling your campaign workers and all those that are going to vote for you to come out and support this drive. And this will be a drive you can talk about next year that your campaign, your workers helped us made history. And I say to you that we're tired. We done asked the government, and I got some demands that I'm writing and laying on the table when I meet with those folks on Wednesday. I don't have any questions anymore. I have demands, and we want this done. Just the other day, and the last name make me seem like you're Muslim, and I respect you as being a Muslim. I respect that last name. But they talked about burning one Koran, and the whole nation, the Christians, just got all upset, and they went and seen about them. I want Mr. Obama to come see about us. We're not going to burn a Koran, nor a Bible, nor a flag, but I want him to come see about us. And thank you for your comment.
My pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
That's a candidate I support, man. I don't live.
All right, then. He got my vote in Alabama. I'm going to draw him on the ballot in Alabama. I'm going to write him in Alabama when I vote in November.
Yes. Omari, I know him.
You know him personally? Okay.
Yes, he's a very, very good brother.
I met him at a conference meeting out in Washington now. Like you said, maybe been about a year ago I met him.
Yes. So I know he'll be out there. You'll definitely get a chance to reacquaint yourself with him because I know he'll be out there at least on one of those days, if not all those days. So
all right, then. That's what we need, man. Yeah. We need support. Everybody, all the brothers who's up north, they got to know that if they have traced their roots back, they came from Africa and they came from the South. They just all they got to do is just trace the roots, and they ought to come and stand with us. And not only that, the folks in Michigan, it's farmers, peach farmers in Michigan, I think. I know blacks. I'm the only black farmer black peach farmer in Alabama, in Clanton, where I live.
Really?
Only black. I got 600 trees, going to sit out 1,000. Now, small black farmer, but, you know, if I want to eat a peach next year, I can go to my own farm.
Right.
So I'm just saying, and people across this nation ought to know, it's just not about individually. I want to add this to you, too. I got paid in 99, October the 14th, the $50,000. But what I'm crying about, in the consent decree, it said in writing that Robert Binion should be able to get a loan from the USDA. No strings attached. Even if he got in a hardship and couldn't pay the loan, they were supposed to write that loan off for Robert Binion. Because why? They had discriminated against me for 20, 40 years. Since my daddy was farming cotton, we've been discriminated all these years. So I guess that was just to, you know, make wrong right. But they haven't made wrong right.
Right. Right. And wouldn't you say, I mean, if we don't win this fight, if we don't win this fight for the black farmers, wouldn't you say that based on the numbers, how the number of black farmers has dwindled, you know, over the past decades, this affects black farmers that are youth right now that would be black farmers in the future? Because if you guys don't win this fight, it seems to me that this is going to even more truncate and shorten and decrease the number of black farmers that we have in this country, because those youth right now who are learning from elders like yourself, some that may not even be born right now, that potentially, you know, could be farmers in the future and be able to sustain themselves, their family, and their communities, this is not going to be a reality. If we don't find, you know, justice in this fight that's going on right now.
That is correct, Mr. Solomon, and I'd say to you, we'll be like the spotted owl, the white leopard. We'll be in that group, the distinct farmer, the black farmer will be distinct from this, because the young man, and here's his motto, here's his theory of this black farmer. When I was farming, he said, when I was farming with my daddy, and they didn't seem like we had to struggle so hard just to make ends meet, but we made it, I don't want no parts of it. That's what the young farmer's saying, but the farmer is folks my age, which I'm 61, I'll be 62 in June. Some farmers got good 10 years left if they could get loans or get some assistance, get grants, if they was there for the farmers. The black farmer would come back and go to farming. People might, but I'm trying to educate the younger farmer that it's important that you till the soil and let life come out of the soil.
Right. And you know, you talk about getting loans. You know, we saw with the bailout, all these, you know, these bad banks, these evil banks that got trillions and trillions of dollars, you know, through these bailouts. You know, the least they could do is bail out the black farmers.
Hey, man, that would, I don't know why they don't want to bail us out. Yes, I do. It's sort of like this, Mr. Solomon. If they bail a black farmer out, and there's enough black farmers done got wiser since the early 60s, since Dr. King and some of us marched across the Edison Bridge. They have gotten wiser. They look back at the farmers they paid the $50,000. They look back now. I've talked to some farmers. They said the worst thing we did is we didn't come together collective and start our own credit union throughout the Southeast. That's the worst thing we could have did. We should have started us a collective credit union and tried to help some other farmers along the way, and we might have saved them farmers. But, you know, everybody want to do away with the black farmer. That way, as black men, we kind of intimidate farmers. Other farmers, the white farmer, and we, because they see we have come a long ways with almost nothing and almost made it, you know, made something happen. And they see that, and it intimidates them, like we trying to take the land. The land belong to God anyhow. Don't belong to no man. I just want to use it while I'm here on this earth.
Right, right. I mean, they can't pull that on us. I mean, we know too much. They can't pull that rubbish on us, because if they even like try to pull that hand, that we're trying to take the land. I mean, we can go back to they took the land from the indigenous folks that were here before their ancestors came here and stole the land and killed off a whole bunch of folks, and then started to bring in, you know, our ancestors from all different parts of continental Africa to come here and work that land. So,
that's right.
You know, exactly. But you made a good point. You know that's how, you know, the Native Americans, you know, prospered, is that, you know, they respected the land, and the land was everybody's. They practiced communalism.
Right.
You know, and it wasn't about monopolizing the land and then, you know, just to get a bottom line. It was about using the land to reap, you know, the benefits, to provide life and to make the earth rich with fruits and vegetables and grain and grass and hay, so, you know, for the livestock to eat, you know, and so that life could continue to go on. What they're trying to do right now is there, it's just looked at as just a profit making thing. It's not looked at as a life sustaining or a community or sustaining, you know, thing, which is what, you know, farming should be. You know, it should be something that's not just about, you know, making a quick dollar. It's
right.
About people sustaining themselves and their families and their communities. And so no, they can't pull that on us. You know,
Well, you know, some of them want to, and then I say again, you know, I don't 10 years ago, you'd have talked to me, I would look at a white man in an angry tone. Now it doesn't bother me what color he is. I look at it how he treats me now. I don't judge a man by his color anymore. I grew out of that, and really and truly, and it makes you feel better. You can go to sleep at night when you grow out of things like that. And I've gotten beyond that point. But I think what they are doing is they still judging us by the color of our skin and not by the content. But and you know, that's wrong. I did it when in my younger years. I did it. But I asked God to forgive me, and I done got over that. And, like I say, I treat him just like I would you, Mr. Solomon, until I see where he's coming from.
Right.
And that's what America's got to do itself. America herself, the liberty, the Statue of Liberty is going to fall in the ocean, in the Atlantic Ocean, if we don't learn how to treat our neighbor. One of the first commandments. One of the main commandments when Jesus died, hung out on the cross. I know a lot of folks don't say he did it, but that ain't for me. When he come back, we'll find out who was right and who was wrong on that issue. I'm going to say this. I got a Muslim brother who lives in Kansas, is headed to this thing with me, and me and him get along well. I don't let your religion or my religion shouldn't get in the way of how to treat a man.
Right.
It shouldn't. It shouldn't look at that religion. Just look at the man and try to deal with the issue. And until America learn how to do that, then that's when we'll become a great nation. Right now, we're struggling with that.
You're right. But I'll tell you this. I mean, it shouldn't be that way. But in 2010, institutional racism is alive and well as much as it's ever been. You know,
it is.
So there are people that discriminate based on the color of their skin, and we see this all the time where, you know, black communities, I mean, we see everything from police brutality, and we see black and brown communities catching hell, that when you look comparatively at white communities, that those things don't happen. And so, you know, as long as I'm alive, you know, I'm going to continue to fight to end, you know, to do whatever I can to end institutional racism, in any shape, form, or fashion I can, you know. So.
And I am too. I'm with you 100%. If you call me next week when I get back home and want me to come join you with your fight, I'll be more than glad. I'm with you because I know it's happening. I know what's happening in America. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm not going to sugarcoat issues. It's happening to us, and whether people believe it or not, this thing is happening.
Right. Right.
And I say again, if you can join us on those 3 days next week, anybody who hear this program, I'd like for them to come and let's hold hands side by side and let's say we're tired of institutionalized racism. We're tired of it.
Right. Definitely. Well, I'll definitely be there on Thursday, and I'm gonna try to bring some young people along with me to join the rally, and that's on this Thursday, September 23rd at high noon on the mall side of the USDA building, 1400 Independence Avenue. That's 1400 Independence Avenue, the mall side of the USDA building, this Thursday, September 23rd at high noon. Mr. Binion, unfortunately, we're out of time for the show. But I want to thank you, and I want to leave an open invitation for you to come back on the show once you get back to Alabama to kind of recap how the week went, and so that we can continue to keep this story fresh. This won't be the last time, and I look forward to being your comrade for life. You know, so
beyond yes, sir. Same here.
Definitely.
I said the same goes here, Ms. Solomon. And it's been a pleasure talking to you. And thank you again for allowing this to happen. And I will bring you up to speed when I get back to Alabama, what went on.
No problem. Thank you so much. Bless you. And I'll see you this week at the very least on Thursday.
God bless you.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And, folks, that was Mr. Binion. And he's a very inspiring man. I mean, I'm very moved with the fight he has within his heart, his soul, and how it's moving throughout his body. I'm very, very inspired, and I hope that everyone that's listening right now is inspired and can go out there this week. I really believe it's our duty. You know, I'm due to work this week, but I'm going to find a way to get the time off so I can at least go down there for a couple hours on Thursday. So if you can't go down there on Thursday, you know, go out there, you know, tomorrow. They leave tomorrow, you know, so maybe you can come out Tuesday or Wednesday. But Thursday is the big rally where we're trying to really make some noise. So I look forward to seeing everybody out there in full force, joining Mr. Robert Binion and the other black farmers who have come such a long way to really, like I said, to fight for justice, equality, and everything that needs to be righted in this situation. So, without further ado, I think this is a great song to end the show on. It's Capital X, called Revolutionary. This is Capital X, who hopefully he's listening right now from Kristiansand, Norway. And brother, if you're listening right now on archive or on archive, you know, maybe you can put your thoughts to that pen and write a song on behalf of these black farmers that need to have this message spread, you know, throughout, not just throughout America, but throughout the world. The world needs to know what's going on here. And I think that this might even be something that should be, this should be something that it should be brought before the United Nations. This, I have my own apprehensiveness about the United Nations and how they have not done the right thing in a lot of different occasions, but this needs to be brought before the United Nations and the different entities from across the globe that may not know about this, so they can know about this, so they can continue, they can start putting pressure on the U.S. government or at the very least seeing the hypocrisy that the U.S. government consistently puts out when they're trying to pressure other countries to observe human rights and civil rights. Well, right here in the belly of the beast, the U.S. is not holding up to its end of the bargain. You know, don't go lecturing the rest of the world about human rights and social rights and civil rights when you're not providing human rights and civil rights for your own citizens in your own country. You know, keep your mouth shut until you bring justice to everybody, regardless of their skin color, their gender, their religion, what have you. I don't care. Everybody needs to have fundamental human rights, and these black farmers deserve it. So this is Solomon for Your World News. Capital X is going to take us out with Revolution.
So we say we always need to make out the body. I'm tired of the brutality and all the corruption. They arrest for nothing, I'm ready to do something. The prisoners is seeing the corporate hustle. Need to be dismantled as we continue to struggle. Open up your eyes, stop living in a bubble. The country you would die for is real quick to fuck you. Every time to touch you, revolutionary sound. When I die, like more than sad songs and a hump in the ground. Wanna leave a world liberated, free from oppression. Free from oppression, wars and racism. I put a bullet in your brain if it'll make any difference. Dismantling colonialists and imperialism. I wanna see every politician rotting in prison. That's not a mission statement, that's my fucking mission. Trying to make us all complacent. We went from chattel slavery to economical enslavement. They take a right to bear arms, leaving us hopeless. There's not our people are slaves at any given moment. Our system is broken. I speak for the unspoken. That every grieving mother is death penalty opponent. The genocide is slaughter of our sons and daughters. Guns are in order, guerrillas without borders. I'm old school, so fuck a new world order. What I spit will bless the kids just like holy water. I stand against the presence with a mic and a shank. Cause I'd rather die free than have a dime in the bank. Fuck a Benz, fuck a Bentley, fuck an MTV crib. I'm tired of living how they tell me to live. They show you no mercy. It's constitutional if you're convicted by jury. You think it's justice to the firstborns on the gurney. Thousands executed, there'll be thousands more. Those being executed, brown and poor. I'm declaring war on the fascist bastards. It's prison against God like it was slave against master. Being captured is not an option. Political imprisonment, I won't be silenced. I'm a product of my environment, so I'll go out violent. Fucking a prison riot from Cosworth to Elmira. Juvenile lifers, born to be lifeless. How much more can anybody be Christ-like? Lethal injection, modern day crucifixion. What I feel, I have to think, and not a murder conviction.